Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Real Science Radio. I'm Bob Enyart. Fred Williams is on assignment. On today's program, we want to look at articles in the current issue of Creation Magazine. And for the first one on dinosaur soft tissue, we'll have to do something that is extremely rare here on Real Science Radio. We'll have to correct an article in Creation Magazine, because the editors there misread a scientific paper about dinosaur tissue, soft tissue in a dinosaur's brain, except that the words are used ambiguously by the science community, and so they thought that it was referring to unfossilized tissue in this iguanodon-like dinosaur, but the paper doesn't report on unfossilized brain tissue, but fossilized. So we're going to talk about that. Also, quasar brightening on today's program, those transient events of the solar system. Turns out around the universe, there are things happening that we shouldn't see happening if the universe were 13.7 billion years old, but there it goes. And also, saving preemies, the effort by researchers to find a way to save especially premature babies. And then, how simple can the simplest cell be, and how many genes might it need, and how hard is it for natural processes just to stumble upon one gene? That's going to be fun. Then we'll look at the Real Science Radio mailbag, and one of our listeners goes to a church where the pastor says that the age of the earth is not all that important, and so Christians should avoid the topic. Of course, he's not considering that the young Earth is a 100% antidote for atheism. Of the hundreds of millions of atheists in the world, they're a minority, but there are still hundreds of millions of them. Showing them and getting them to see the evidence for the young Earth is a 100% effective antidote for atheism, and it also falsifies the lie that we evolved from apes. So the age of the earth is an incredibly powerful topic, and I'm looking forward to reading to you excerpts of this letter from the RSR mailbag. And there's also the matter of our annual September telethon. We're up to $19,000. I am so thankful to everyone who's given and who has subscribed to our monthly services, our videos, Bible studies, sermons, people signing up for an automatic donation. So thank you. The goal is $30,000, and we still need your help if you haven't given, if you appreciate the show, if it's valuable to you, if you think it helps to reach other people, then please consider giving. Call us at 1-800-8-ENYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. Or go online to our website, rsr.org, Real Science Radio. rsr.org, click on the store, and you could either subscribe or purchase any of our science materials in the science department at the store. And there's also an idea for a $10,000 underwriter to put our entire global flood video on YouTube. Of course, we'd lose our ongoing sales by doing that, but hence the need for a $10,000 underwriter, and then also in one fell swoop, that would help us reach our goal. But even before all that, there are two stories in the news I'd like to share with you. Yesterday, a hiker was injured in Yosemite National Park in California. You know the big rock, El Capitan, that climbers, it's astounding what they're able to do. Well, there was a rock slide. Rocks broke off of El Capitan again yesterday, injuring one person, according to the National Park Service. And the day before, on Wednesday, sadly, rocks broke off and killed a British tourist. So RSR listeners have emailed us this story here. It's out of the New York Times, because it's consistent with our list of the transient events in the solar system. Remember that? We did a show on all the things we see in the solar system that we're seeing right now, but if it were billions of years old, we shouldn't be seeing all these things on every planet and all these moons happening all at the same time. It's astounding. And that's evidence that the whole system is not 4.5 billion years old, but that it's less than 10,000 years old. And also, as part of that, we include the transient events on the Earth, the things that are happening, that if the features on the Earth were really millions of years old, we shouldn't see all these geological attractions collapsing, dozens of them collapsing in the recent past. In fact, on the Missouri River in Montana, the famous Lewis and Clark Arch, the Eye of the Needle, collapsed. In the Mediterranean, the famed Malta's Azure Window collapsed. The London Bridge, they call it, in South Australia, collapsed. Landscape Arch in Utah's Arches National Park, the fifth longest naturally occurring arch in the world, became less stable when a tourist just happened to catch video of a 70-foot slab falling off of it. There have been 43 known collapses at Arches National Park since 1977. Island Archway, just off Australia's Victoria coast, collapsed. The Sentinel in Bryce Canyon National Park collapsed. And on, we list them all. It's the internet's most comprehensive list of geological features that have collapsed within the last years. And they're collapsing at an incredible rate, which makes the argument then, with all of these geological attractions collapsing and the same number not being replenished, and we're told they take tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, or millions of years to form, well, then you got a replenishment problem. You have the exact same problem in astronomy with blue stars. Blue stars, they're short-lived, and there are so many of them. Where's the blue star assembly line? So we could list this as an honorable mention. It's not an arch or a spire, but El Capitan is so iconic. And it also leads us to another observation. There are rock slides off the mountains, and the winds and the rains and the snow and the hail erode the mountains, which they all do. And the rivers carry the sediments into the oceans in the major deltas, in the Mississippi and the Nile and the Amazon and elsewhere. The erosion rate for the continents is far greater than the claimed rate at which they would be uplifted, so that the continents should have eroded flat to sea level. In fact, they should never have been able to rise up in the first place because of erosion. So that's one of two quick stories here at the beginning. The second is NASA's Solar Probe Plus. Their Solar Probe Plus, scheduled to be launched next summer, where they plan to fly to the corona of the sun. So exciting. You know how the surface of the sun is way cooler than the atmosphere? So the surface of the sun is like 10,000 degrees or so. The atmosphere is millions of degrees, the corona. And that's what we were able to see during the recent total solar eclipse. Because of the perfect design of the solar system, we got to observe that. And it was so awesome to see the hand of God at work. Well, the corona is 300 times hotter than the surface of the sun. And the interior of the sun, again, gets much hotter, many millions of degrees. But so then why, when the surface is only 10,000 degrees, why is the corona up to 3 million degrees? Why is that Fahrenheit? It's interesting that there are theories, but scientists don't know. Perhaps one of the theories are right, but they don't yet know. And so this Solar Probe Plus mission is designed to give us information, data, to help us understand why the corona is so hot. You know what's interesting about that? The surface, 10,000 degrees. The atmosphere, 3 million degrees. And so how much of the sun's energy is used to heat up the atmosphere of the sun? It's only about a millionth of its overall energy output. That is so interesting to me. And you could ask a question as a creationist. When God created the sun, was it perfect, or might it harm life on Earth when it was created? It would have been perfect. That means coronal mass ejections, CMEs, were unlikely to happen in any way that could have been potentially dangerous to the Earth. So what would have spoiled the sun's initial perfection? It would be astounding if during this solar mission, if NASA makes discoveries that help us as creationists, because remember, all scientists work for Walt Brown, right? All scientists work for Dr. Walt Brown. And the sun is so wildly massive compared to the Earth. You could put a million Earths into the sun. But it's interesting that the corona is far less massive. And if it was perfect when God created it, it would have been, so we could get rid of the if. The sun was perfect when God created it. How much contamination is needed to spoil perfection? There's a question, no? Could we quantify that? How much contamination is needed to spoil perfection? And the answer might be pretty much any contamination could spoil perfection. And so we are excited here at Real Science Radio to follow NASA's solar probe, to learn along with the secular scientists all we can about the sun and see what can be understood. A scientist who we've interviewed here on Real Science Radio, Dr. Jason Lyle, he is an astrophysicist, got his PhD from CU up in Boulder, University of Colorado. He made a discovery about the sun that's been published in the scientific literature. We know about the currents on the surface. Well, he analyzed those mathematically, and he made a discovery about the subsurface currents, which is so awesome. They say creationists can't do science. They don't know much about creation science, do they? And before we leave this topic, remember the problems that the atheists have with the sun itself and how it doesn't fit into their model. For example, the sun is not spinning rapidly like it should be if the entire solar system collapsed from a spinning cloud, a solar nebula. The sun is missing almost 100% of the spin it should have. Instead, all that angular momentum is in the planets. Very little is in the sun. Also, the sun is rotating on its axis, but it's not rotating on the same axis as the planets are. The ecliptic of the planets are 7 degrees off that of the sun. That contradicts the nebular hypothesis. Each of these things falsifies the atheist claim of understanding how the solar system could have formed naturally. They have the cold young sun problem. You know what the cold young sun problem is? One of our studio audience members is chuckling. No, it's not the sun young moon problem. That's a different kind of problem. This is the cold young sun problem. And that's where, as the sun was forming over tens, hundreds of millions of years, it would have been cool. And as a result of being cool, then the planets would be far colder than they are now. And Earth, with all our liquid water, would be a solid ice cube. I mean, there'd be frozen rock. But then also all water on the surface of the Earth would be frozen miles deep in the oceans. Geologists, creationists, and evolutionists, old earthers, they all agree that the oceans were never frozen solid. So that's another problem that they have, that they need to find a way by random chance to change our atmosphere so that it would trap more heat early in Earth's history and gradually less heat as we come up to modern times. That's all absurd. So the cool young sun problem is another way to falsify their claimed secular origins. Also, remember that the sun's mass and size are perfect for the Earth's biosystem. Its brightness, its temperature, perfect. Even the color of the sun's light is tuned for maximum benefit for plants' photosynthesis. And the sun has low metallicity, astronomers call it. If it didn't, it could destroy all life on Earth. So the sun is a huge problem for the atheist. It falsifies their theory on how the solar system could have formed naturally. Okay, now, I said that we're going to present a correction to an article in the current issue of Creation Magazine where they reported unfossilized dinosaur tissue, yet another discovery. There have been so many. But it turns out this one is wrong. Before I get into the details of that, consider the publication itself. Fred Williams and I have long said that of all the creation periodicals, we absolutely love Creation Magazine, published by Creation Ministries International out of Australia. They've got offices here and around the world. And in fact, they have subscribers from 110 countries. It's just astounding what has been happening with the creation movement literally reaching millions of people. Hey, you see the arcs that have been built around the world, full-size arcs, replicas of Noah's Ark, and the creation museums going up, Ken Ham and all the work at Answers in Genesis, of course, Dr. Walt Brown and all his work helping people understand the origin of comets, asteroids, ocean trenches, the Grand Canyon, and the mechanism of the global flood. So there's so much happening. There's so many people to reach. It's also very exciting. So here in the current issue of Creation Magazine, it comes out quarterly, in their upfront creation news and views, in that section, they have all these short news items. And this one titled Soft Tissue in Fossil Dinosaur Brains. Boy, doesn't that sound interesting? Soft Tissue in Fossil Dinosaur Brains. It comes from a peer-reviewed scientific publication, of course. The term soft tissue is used ambiguously. The paleontology community should deal with this because many times we've seen reporters make this mistake. When a paper is documenting the discovery of dinosaur soft tissue, then there are reporters who think that they're referring to unfossilized, original biological material that grew inside of the dinosaur, but typically they're not. Typically, when they say they have discovered dinosaur soft tissue, what they mean typically is that they have discovered perhaps the imprint of scales, and they would call that soft tissue. Or they've discovered permineralized organs inside of the dinosaur's body. Permineralized meaning that they've turned to stone. They're no longer biological. And they refer to that as discovering soft tissue. And that's the way it was for a century until Mary Schweitzer published in the journal Science that no, we're actually finding unfossilized, still soft, flexible, transparent, biological material that is endogenous, that is, it grew within the dinosaur, and it never turned to stone. So it's understandable that so many reporters have made this error, and while we love Creation Magazine and their editors, their writers, they have now made this same mistake. I'll read you two quotes from this article about an iguanodon-like dinosaur. You know those two cute little dinosaurs inside the kitchen in Jurassic Park? They were going after the kids. I guess they weren't so cute, right? But an iguanodon-like creature would be something like those guys. A lot smaller than a T-Rex, but potentially fierce. So they found a fossil in England. They got the skull, and inside the skull, there is phenomenal preservation of the iguanodon's brain. It's absolutely astounding. However, that doesn't mean that it's still biological because there are ways for mineral grains to replace tissue and even preserve cellular structures. Phosphatic fossilization, for example. It's just extraordinary. And that's what's happened here in this case. Well, the mistake in Creation Magazine, the headline is technically correct, soft tissue and fossil dinosaur brains. The error comes from the article itself. It says this, in 2016, researchers reported not just fossilized brains, but unfossilized brain tissue. So it turns out that's not true. That was not reported. They also write, in this allegedly 133 million-year-old fossil, they found unfossilized protein fragments, brain tissue, fine capillaries, collagen structures, and the membrane that surrounds the brain. That'd be absolutely wonderful, and it is certainly possible, and the fact that this was misreported doesn't take anything away from the many discoveries of original biological material in dinosaurs and other Mesozoic creatures that have yielded their biological material. They have soft tissue, actual original biomaterial from a hadrosaur, from a titanosaur, from an ornithomimosaur. Try to say that five times fast. An ornithomimosaur, that's an ostrich-like dinosaur. From a mosasaur, which is an extinct marine reptile. From a triceratops, from a lufengosaur, from a T-Rex, and from Archaeopteryx. Those are all the creatures, plus more, that we've documented at rsr.org/dinosaur. The discoveries have been reported in journals including the journal Nature, Science, Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, Plus One, Proceedings of the Royal Society, the journal Bone, Acta Histochemica, the Journal of Vertebrate Paleontology, Proteome Research, and others. And you know what they found in these dinosaurs and in creatures buried in the dinosaur strata and deeper? They've discovered flexible and transparent blood vessels, red blood cells, many proteins, including beta carotene. Now, they sequence the proteins, so they know they're not looking at bacteria, they're not looking at biofilm, they're not looking at contamination. They're looking at the right kind of protein growing in the right part of the dinosaur, and they sequence it. So beta carotene, and then tubulin, that builds the railroad tracks that are inside our cells to give them structure. Collagen, actin, myosin, that's a motor protein, and hemoglobin. They've got osteocyte cells, pigment, even pigment from within dinosaur eggshells. And they've got evidence of melanosomes. They also have the histone protein. You know what that is? Harvard sequenced the histone protein from a hadrosaur. The histone proteins, that's what the DNA is wound up around in the nucleus of your cells. And they have powerful evidence that they have actual DNA from a T-Rex. That's because they have positive results from multiple double helix tests for inside the nucleus, inside the osteocyte, the bone cells, from inside the bones of a dinosaur. So when science reporters, including, this is the first time I've ever seen it from Creation Magazine, when they misread the ambiguous terminology in a scientific journal, that doesn't take away at all from the incredible discoveries. The greatest discovery in the history of paleontology is dinosaur soft tissue, and the media doesn't want the public to know about it, so they don't talk about it. Because when they lose the dinosaurs, they lose it all. So before I contacted a scientist at CMI to let them know about this, I first contacted some experts, including published experts on dinosaur soft tissue, creationists, and showed them my concern. They agreed, and then we sent this to a scientist, PhD scientist at CMI, and all three agreed that, yes, this was a mistake, and so that CMI will decide what to do about it. And they're just an extraordinary organization. We love them dearly. If you haven't subscribed to Creation Magazine, it's beyond me why you haven't done that. Certainly, you have loved ones who could benefit from this magazine. Certainly, you have kids or grandkids or friends or coworkers. Watch out at work, you could get fired. But please subscribe to Creation Magazine. I think you'll absolutely love it. Oh, we're going to publish a list of terms with today's show summary on rsr.org. And these terms are the ones you look for in a scientific paper or in an article to figure out if the soft tissue is really biological or if they're only talking about permineralized soft tissue. We have about 30 terms that we'll publish. And so that's what I did. I went through the paper and I looked for the use of terms like endogenous or molecular chemistry or proteinaceous, you know, protein fragments, sequencing amino acids, peptide spectral signature, biomolecules, biomarkers, biochemistry, anything like that, organic compounds, pliable, still soft, transparent, immunology and antibodies, because that's one of the ways they figure out that this is dinosaur soft tissue. They introduce it into organisms, like into a chicken, say, and they look to see, is the chicken producing antibodies for reptile hemoglobin? So you look for these terms. Antigenic, collagenase, you know, are they using an enzyme to digest the collagen as another test for determining that, yes, this really is collagen from the dinosaur? Unfossilized, contamination, contaminants, biofilm. So these are the kinds of words you look for, and you have to be very careful for words that are used ambiguously, like soft tissue, completely ambiguous. And even blood vessels, they'll talk about blood vessels where they mean they have been permineralized, that they're now stone, but they'll call them blood vessels. And even collagen, they'll call it collagen when it's permineralized. So the scientific community has a problem with its terminology. And at our website, rsr.org/dinosaur, we have a link to a spreadsheet listing all of these discoveries with links to the original peer-reviewed papers. And at the bottom of that spreadsheet, we call for a clarification on terminology. Since we now are in the age of sequencing endogenous dinosaur proteins, the traditional use of soft tissue, without further clarification, needs to end. It has to be discontinued. They have to point out that it's permineralized soft tissue. Otherwise, the scientists will be confusing people, including science journalists. They'll confuse them too. So the unqualified phrase soft tissue should not be used from here on out to refer to permineralized stone. And a great phrase to describe the actual biological soft tissue is a biomaterial fossil, an original biomaterial fossil. That's terminology that will be helpful to paleontology. But we thank these scientists for doing such a great job of exploring the world that God made and finding the evidence of the global flood, which is a judgment, which is a preview of the judgment to come, because Jesus Christ, as he promised, he will return. I know there were a lot of end times folks saying that the rapture would be on Saturday, September 23rd, but it didn't happen, right? No, it didn't happen. We're just sure it didn't? Yeah, we're sure it didn't happen. In the blink of an eye, everybody left and came back. No, we are looking forward to the return of the Lord, but on our show, as we've done so many times in the past with all these predictions and misinterpretations of headlines and current events and normal astronomical events like blood moons or eclipses and alignment of planets, all of that misinterpreted time after time after time, with Christians losing credibility so that their neighbors are less likely to pay attention when they share the truth of the resurrection of Jesus Christ. All right, quasars, brightening. Now, quasars apparently associated with black holes in the center of galaxies. Astronomers have been studying these things for many decades. And by their theory, a quasar could change, for example, get brighter and brighter and brighter over a period of time of millions of years. So there is one particular quasar that was written about in the Astrophysical Journal, a very prestigious scientific journal, earlier this year, paper titled "The Discovery of the Rapid Turn-On of a Luminous Quasar." And this quasar grew to be 10 times brighter while astronomers were watching it over a period of a year. 1 year, 10 times brighter. It's supposed to happen over millions of years. That's got to go on our list of not so old things. It just has to, because we have documented scores of examples of things that we are told by old Earth scientists and by pastors who are well-meaning but uninformed, uneducated in the matter of young Earth creation science. We're told that any number of these things takes millions of years to occur. And then, well, golly, look at that. It just happened right before our eyes. Remember the island Surtsey off the coast of Iceland? And the chief geologist of Iceland said, as we have photographic evidence of the birth of this island, a volcanic island, and within a few years, he describes the incredible geological diversity on the island. And he actually says, he writes that we were taught that these things would take millions of years, and we're seeing them happen in the space of weeks and months and years. Wow. So not only on the surface of the Earth, not only with opals that were supposed to take 10,000 years to form, And now we know they're formed by microbes on a beach in Australia where they take about 3 months. That's a little different, right? Some textbooks claimed that opals took as long as 10,000 to 100,000 years to form. And it turns out they form in about 10 months. Let God be true and every man a liar. God's word is the accurate history of the world and the edifice of the old features, the old earth, the old solar system, the old galaxy, the old universe. It's a house of cards built on sand, and it's all falling down. And it's so exciting to see as a Christian. It's just so exciting. And the reason that everyone doesn't know about dinosaur soft tissue, I mean, dinosaurs are the most exciting thing in the museum that thrills children, in fact, children of all ages. Why doesn't everyone know about it? Because they know that when they lose the dinosaurs, they lose it all. So that's one of the themes here at Bob and Yurt Live, our classic list of not so old things, showing in discipline after discipline that when we've been told something would take a million years, like blue eyes. Blue eyes. How far back do geneticists trace blue eyes? They say that everyone who has blue eyes has inherited that from a single ancestor who lived just about 6,000 years ago. That's the latest science from 2017. It's all so exciting. So here at Real Science Radio, we do our best to take the scientific discoveries, many of them that have been analyzed by creation scientists, and so we share their conclusions with you and the data itself, and others that we get right out of the science press and out of the peer-reviewed scientific journals, Fred Williams and I collecting the stories, sharing them with you, all of it evidence for the Creator God, that we were made in His image and His likeness. And you know what? You know what a dinosaur red blood cell means? What does it really mean that we have a dinosaur red blood cell? It means that Jesus Christ rose from the dead. That's what it means. That He shed His blood for you, for me, for us, that if we trust in Him, we will have eternal life and not be separated from God forever. How could it mean that? How could a dinosaur red blood cell mean that Jesus Christ rose from the dead? Because in the alternative worldviews, the world is either billions of years old or it's young, and the geologic column is not a record of hundreds of millions and billions of years, but it's a record of the global flood. And because we have red blood cells in dinosaur bones, they're breaking them open around the world. They're finding red blood cells. Because they have not yet decomposed, it doesn't mean that they're magical red blood cells that violate all the laws of physics. What it means is that the dinosaurs died only shortly before the earliest Egyptian mummies were mummified. That's what it means. And so it means that the earth is young because the geologic column is not a record of age. It's a record of the deposition of sediments from the global flood. And it means that dinosaurs lived with man. And it means that, therefore, the Bible is right and Genesis is correct when it says that God made man on the same day that He made the land animals, just 3 days after He made the plants, on the sixth day after He made the heavens and the earth. So let me skip to the RSR mailbag in this wonderful letter from Paul. Hey, Bob, this is Paul. I've met you at the Rocky Mountain Creation Fellowship in Denver. That's a creationist group. We meet every second Friday of the month. I have a great time. I wanted to tell you about an intelligent design speaker that my church hosted Sunday evening. His name is Dr. Wade Warren from Louisiana University. So that's cool, right? He's against evolution, and he supports intelligent design, that an intelligent designer created life on Earth somehow. But the ID people are normally old earthers, and they don't believe in the global flood, and they don't believe that there were no thorns before the fall. For example, my small group of biblical creationist friends went to hear him speak, and we were eager to see if our church was actually hosting a young earth creationist, because our pastor has mentioned before that the age of the earth doesn't matter and that Christians should stay away from the topic. Now, that's so sad. For one, it keeps you from learning science, real science, because then you're susceptible to all the lies of the evolutionists, and they make the most fascinating scientific discoveries into hidden things that they bury in dusty old journals, or they simply obscure the excitement of the evidence of God's hand in the solar system, on the earth, in life sciences. It's all so thrilling. So at any rate, no, let's not stay away from the topic, the young age of the earth. When someone is shown the evidence for the young age of the earth and they are persuaded by the evidence, that is a 100% antidote for atheism, and it falsifies the lie that we evolved from apes. So big difference in someone's worldview when they realize, hey, you know what? There must be a God, and I didn't evolve from an ape. And so what book in all the world explains that? Well, Genesis says that God made mankind in his image, in his likeness. We didn't evolve from animals. And you take the chronology of Genesis, and it shows that God made the earth in the recent past. So that's it. Jesus Christ rose from the dead, or there is no such thing as dinosaur soft tissue. That's one choice you have. So you could bury your head in the sand. So Paul goes on to explain that the ID speaker gave a 45-minute overview of how bogus evolution really is, the molecules to man evolution. And he said that was great. It was material we're already familiar with, but I'm sure it was new to some in the audience. It quickly became obvious, though, that he wasn't going to mention the age of the earth, that is, until the Q&A. Of course, one of the first questions he got was, is the earth old? Is it young? Does it matter? And that question opened the floodgates. Several questions were asked about the reading of Genesis chapters 1 through 11. Our speaker said he had been studying Hebrew for several years, so he claimed that the Bible has room before Adam and Eve for millions of years. Now, isn't that something? Before Adam and Eve for millions of years. Let me open up my Bible here to what would be a good book to consider that proposition. The book of Exodus, the Ten Commandments. In our Bible studies, people subscribe to our monthly studies. We've gone verse by verse through so many of the books of the Bible. You can get that too, and you'll help us meet our goal, because when someone subscribes during our telethon, let's say you subscribe to a $25 a month resource or a $35 a month subscription, we multiply that by 10, and so we add $350 to the telethon goal, because people might keep the subscription for a year or more or less. We multiply it by 10. So here we have in the book of Exodus, chapter 20, verse 11, this is God speaking. In 6 days, the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea, and all that is in them, and rested on the seventh day. Therefore, the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it. Okay, there we go. In 6 days, God made the heavens and the earth, the sea, and everything that is in them, and he made man on the sixth day. So how do you fit billions of years before Adam and Eve were made? Well, you can do it if you don't take the Ten Commandments literally, and it is so obviously literal. One Hebrew scholar put it this way. He said, there is no professor at any world-class university of Hebrew or Old Testament who would deny that the author of Genesis intended the reader to add up the ages from Adam to get to the time of Abraham and the age of the earth. That's the obvious intention of the author of Genesis. And the author wasn't only Moses, it was God, because God inspired Moses to write what he did. So the letter from Paul in the RSR mailbag goes on, and he says, I got a chance to ask one question. So I asked if he had heard of all the recent discoveries of dinosaur soft tissue being found in dinosaur bones, starting with Mary Schweitzer about 10 years ago. I wanted to know what he thought of that and how the tissue and blood cells could last 65 million years. His answer? Well, I don't know about that. Let's go to the next question. That's something, huh? Wow. So Fred Williams and I together, I hope he and I can get to the simplest cell, because as The atheists want to show that a simple cell can arise by natural processes, which is impossible, but that's their hope. And they originally said, well, if you have 256 genes, that would be enough to have a living cell. And then they increased it, the 387 genes. And now the latest, because they take the simplest prokaryote they can find, and they start to remove its genes, one by one, dozens at a time, and they start to trim down its genome to where they've got what they think is now the smallest possible size of a genome, 473 genes, which is 531,000 genetic letters. 531,000 needing to be in the right order for the simplest cell to survive. And you know what? Even if they were right at that, it's way more complicated than that. Way more complicated. Because that thing needed to have a cell membrane to separate it from the rest of the world. And the cell membrane is wildly complicated. And there's so much more to this story, but Fred and I will enjoy looking into that. And also the dinosaur eggs, we'll share that with you. More original biological material in dinosaur eggs. Really fun. They probably weren't soaking in hemoglobin for the last 80 million years. I wouldn't think. But just call me a skeptic. So I said there's an opportunity for an underwriter to help us put our Global Flood video in its entirety on YouTube. Right now, we have excerpts of Real Science Radio's Global Flood and the Hydroplate Theory video. We have excerpts on YouTube. We would love to put the entire video there, but we need help because this is one of the ways that we meet our expenses and stay on the air is when people purchase our materials. So to put the whole thing on YouTube would pretty much end the sales of our Global Flood video, but we would reach so many more people. And that's always the goal, to reach as many people as we can and to find a way to sustain ourselves so we could continue until the Lord returns or for as long as there's breath in our bodies. So, if you would like to help, there must be someone in the audience who could consider underwriting the full and free publication of Real Science Radio's Global Flood video on YouTube. It would be a thrill for us, for so many more people to be able to watch this, all the conversations that would ensue, the advance of the debate within the creation community of the mechanism for the global flood. Where did the water come from? And where did it go to? Central issues that are presented here in this video. So obviously, it would have to be someone of means who could afford a $10,000 underwriting grant to get this video on YouTube. But we're hoping, we're praying that someone in the audience might consider doing that, that someone can do that. And so if it's you, the ways to reach us, as always, our phone number at the studio, 1-800-8-N-Y-A-R-T. That's 1-800-8-E-N-Y-A-R-T or 1-800-836-9278, 1-800-836-9278. Also, you can email me at bob@rsr.org, bob@rsr.org, or you could go to our website, rsr.org, click on the store and make a donation. Wow. Of $10,000 and put in the note, it's to publish the flood video on YouTube. So we are out of time. I'm looking forward to the next episode of Real Science Radio, if the Lord tarries. So for Fred Williams and RSR, this is Bob Benyart. May God bless you.
Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real. That's what I'm talking about.